This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 5, Episode 20. I'm used to six balls in an over. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, it all gets a little bit snippy with Gareth, but in the best possible form of feedback, of course. And then we go on to help a young leg spin bowler with his run-up and a cricket coach with keeping his 17 to 25 year old players as fit as he possibly can. All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's time for this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to coaching and playing better cricket, no matter where you are in the world, no matter what you do. My name is David Hinchliffe, and this week I am joined, as I always am, by the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hi, Gareth. How's it going?
Very well, thank you. I'm on half term, but I'm still in school and looking over a rainy cricket ground today.
Oh, goodness. So no cricket going on today?
No. We finished for the week, and I suppose we've got the grass regrowing. That's what it's doing in front of me at the moment.
Yeah, it's amazing how fast it grows when you get a bit of weather like that, doesn't it? I mean, we had a game on the weekend on a Sunday, and the pitch was covered, and we took the covers off to try and get the game on, but it rained again, so we put the covers away and all went home. And the next day we're back up the ground, and it was already noticeably greener on that pitch. It's amazing how quickly it gets green when the rain comes.
It doesn't take a lot, that is for sure.
Let's get some feedback on a couple of things that you wrote about in the past on Pitch Vision Academy. And first of all, on your article that you wrote about the cost of wides and no balls and how you calculate those. And for anyone who hadn't read that article, I do recommend that you read it. But you'd worked out a way of calculating how much it really costs when somebody bowls a wide or a no ball by adding the runs from the extra ball that's bowled, right?
Mm, that's right, yeah.
Someone followed up with a question from that. It was Sam, and he said, I'm not sure if I've missed something here, but you include the extra ball for no balls, which is correct, as the batsman can score off both the no ball itself and the extra ball in the over. However, with a wide, this is not the case. The batsman still only has six balls to score off. The impact of the wide is only the number of runs conceded that ball, not the number of wides plus the extra final ball. If the wide had not occurred, the batsman wouldn't have any fewer balls to score off. Still six.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, so that's completely blown my head. So what do you say in reply to that?
Well, what I say is the way that I do it, which I stuck out there, is that we could always assume that the ball that would have been bowled if it had been straight or would have been maybe fifth stump line or whatever, could have been a dot ball. So we've given a runaway on that one, and then therefore we are forced to bowl an extra delivery. And whatever runs get hit off of that extra delivery or incurred off of that extra delivery gets added to that total. It's all about the impact of wides and no balls, really. And that's why the formula is set up like that. So, yeah, I get that there's six balls in an over. I'm used to that one after a few years of playing the game. But all I do really is keep it as simple as possible, because these formulas that you can put together, unless you're Mr. Duckworth Lewis or the Wasp that we're now seeing around the world in 50-over cricket, which are very complex formulas, I try to keep them as simple as possible, ones that people understand, that the players understand, because ultimately there's no point in coming up with a formula that doesn't have a performance gain off at the end of it. And that's certainly the way that I operate on that. So yeah, I take the point that Sam makes. I think it's a sensible point, but in terms of performance benefit, the formula is set up in the way that it is.
And I guess the idea is not to create something which is mathematically beautifully perfect, but it's to create something which makes the player think, well, hang on a minute, if I bowl a wide here, it's not going to just be one run. It's going to be one run plus that four that the guy hit on the last ball of the over.
Yeah, and actually the interesting thing has been that often there hasn't been a four that's come off of the back of a wide. And when we've gone back over the statistics, the most prevalent score that you have actually is one off of the extra ball, whether it be a no ball or a Aura Wide, which has been quite interesting for me, and again could get you thinking along the lines of what can we do to increase our impact as a batting side if we get an extra delivery to score off of. So I think ones and twos and mostly dots of what's come from it, but it's just been really interesting to watch, not just the team that I'm in, because we've worked on trying to bowl straight and keeping things simple for a long time, and we're getting there slowly, but also the fact that other teams are coming here, and apart from one side, there was one team that came here and bowled five extras over the course of a 50 over period.
Wow.
Five wides or no balls over the 50 over period. The rest of that have all been in the 20s, which is disappointing, because as I said in the article, I remember growing up and my colleagues, even at club level, so we're not talking about, you know, world-class bowlers, were able to bowl six balls, get it in and around the right area. So to me, something's changed. And that was the main emphasis of the article, was putting some statistical proof or evidence to facilitate a question of why are these things happening? What can I do about it? Because as I said in the article, I always look to try and have a look in the mirror and see what I can be doing better rather than attributing blame elsewhere. Which is what some people do, but that's my way, and the way that I did it was to come up with that formula, which is really basic, maybe too simple for some, but it's certainly beginning to have a performance effect here, which is what it's all about.
Now the second point was from an old article, but I reposted it up on our Facebook page because I was looking through the archives of Pitch Vision Academy, and I found this. And I thought it was worth going back over again because it was an excellent drill. It was your write-up of the Wilson-Thompson 40-run consequence net. I'm sure you remember that one.
I do.
Just briefly with that one, the idea of the drill is in nets, each batting pair has to run 40 runs in 15 minutes of batting against three bowlers. And it was all time, so you had to score. You had to do a single within a certain amount of time, a two in a certain amount of time, and a three in a certain amount of time. So, and there's another statistical one here, and it's from Brian. And Brian said, "There's something funny with the timings on the ones, twos, and threes. The first single takes 3.75 seconds. The second run takes 4.5 seconds, and the third run takes 3.75 seconds again. Should the benchmark for three runs be 13 seconds instead?"
Possibly is the question. What we did was we used our sprint times and our on-pad sprint times to inform our timings that we were looking to try and hit in that session. So it was very much geared around the group that we had in front of us. We do a lot of physical testing of these guys, and it's something that the guys really enjoy and helps to push them on as well. So we were basing ours purely on that group and purely around the results that we'd attained within our fitness tests. So, yeah, to me, the concept is, can you incorporate running between the wickets within the session? Can we introduce a little bit of consequence when people don't achieve the running between the wickets and the times that you choose and you specify? Because ultimately, when we get out into the middle of the game, there's a game of consequence. You know, it's a harsh game. And if we don't make our distance between the stumps and get run out, then we walk back to the pad. And equally, if we don't recover from fatigue, which is part of that session as well, and we end up making an error straight afterwards, then we're walking back to the pad. So those are the key messages from it. As for the numbers that we put alongside, that was very much geared to our group. And obviously, if you're working with more elite athletes or less elite athletes, those numbers need to be shifted to make them realistic.
Yeah, if you're working with the club under 11s, it's going to be a bit harsh to say 12 seconds for a three, isn't it? It's,
oh, goodness, yeah.
You're going to have to really get a wriggle on. We've got an under 12 in our club who also does quite a lot of sprinting. He might make it, but the others would be struggling quite a lot. So
yeah, you've always got to make these things realistic, haven't you? And what I suppose the benefit of numbers and benefit of doing the fitness testing as we do is that we can then make our cricket sessions incredibly linked to those numbers and very specific to that group. And the research behind that is that when you make things linked to the group, then you get incredibly strong buy-in. And that's certainly something we've experienced with that particular group that ran through that Thompson-Wilson consequence net.
Yeah, if it's impossibly hard, then people are going to switch off to it straight away, and you lose all the benefits of quantifying that, trying to quantify that anyway. So it's very important to make sure that it's the classic thing of any goal, isn't it? There has to be a stretch, but it has to be achievable. If you make it too easy, people switch off. If you make it too difficult, people switch off. So you have to find that lovely, lovely balance, or that lovely area of flow, as it's been called.
Yep, correct.
Okay, so those were a couple of nice questions. We got some nice questions coming up later on as well in the mailbag. Before we do that, we're going to have an interview, so stay tuned for that. That's going to be after the yes-no round, and that is three questions that we can only answer yes or no to, no matter how much more that we want to say. And this week, most of the yes-no questions have been taken from Twitter, so thank you very much to Twitter for giving me some ideas. You ready, Gareth?
Yeah, let's go for it.
First question, always take the positives.
No.
Second question, train the opposite way than most.
No.
Yes. Third question, play like it means nothing, even when it means everything.
No.
Yes. Time for the interview portion of the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. I'm joined on the line by Donovan Miller, who is the manager and the coach of the Chris Gayle Academy. Hi, Donovan. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
I'm great. Thank you very much. And so for those of us who don't know much about the Chris Gayle Academy, can you tell us a little bit about how it all works and Chris's involvement and what you're doing there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, how it works is about 2.5 years ago, me and Chris have a little chat over the phone, and Chris is always looking to give back something to community. Obviously, he's been from he didn't come from a very wealthy background in true cricket, and he works very hard to get where he is, and he's thinking of ways to give back. And one of the idea is we come up with is how about we set up an academy to try and educate young people and try and teach them the life skills away from cricket. The problem is I am living in the UK and he wants to do something in Jamaica. So we said, how are we going to do that? And what the plan we come up with is how about we pilot the program in London, because obviously I work for Cricket for Change, and we've been doing this type of work, working in disadvantaged community for over 30 years. So I said the best place to get to pilot it is in London, and then hopefully if it works well, then we could start looking at this time of the year setting up another version in Jamaica.
And what type of players are involved in the setup?
Well, we have some very good players, but most of these players are from difficult background, have difficult circumstances in their lives, all different type of challenges, we kind of get them together as a group and try and have each session. We will have a session around life skills. It could be around anything like how to fill in a CV, a bit fitness session, anything around life, and then obviously the cricket comes second. We also have some high quality matches, at least 10 high quality matches set up for these young people during the course of the summer. For example, we play like MCC Young Cricketers, Kent Second 11, Essex Second 11, Club Cricket Conference. So those are the type of high quality fixtures we try and arrange for the young people. But we also try and not to concentrate too much on the cricket and more concentrate on one side of their life they want to develop. For example, someone might say they want to become a coach. So what we'll do, we try and train them and give them the guidance to become, how to become a coach and all the things that it takes and you have to do to become a coach. Some of the young people might don't want to be working sports, they might want to be a plumber. We direct them to the right firm. Some of them might want to become a solicitor. We have contacts with solicitor firm, and we kind of put them to work experience and try and help them in that way.
And the two feed into each other, don't they? I mean, cricket and life, you know, it's hard to keep them separate, really, because cricket reveals what kind of a character you are, and it helps you develop your personality and understand yourself better, and that feeds into life. And the same with life, you know, the more you know about yourself as a person, the better a cricketer you're going to be. So it's kind of a virtuous circle, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you know, if you look back on most of the cricketers who are very good players, they understand a way of life, how to go about certain things in life. And that's what we are trying to tell the young people, that look, you are already talented, that's one step, but the next side you need to work on is your life skills. If you can get that right, then everything will fit into place nicely. And it's good to see, because all the young people in the academy have really bought into the program. If you would have visited one of our sessions, you know, we will have a session where there's no cricket activity to take place that week, and everyone leaves happy and come back the same time next week. So it is working really well so far in the UK. And we would like it's the same for Jamaica as well.
Well, Chris, of course, is a great example to follow, because he's made absolutely the most of his ability. He's probably one of the finest 2020 batsmen of all time, isn't he? And that's because he knows his own game and he knows himself. And I think, you know, that's all right. Not everybody can copy his style of batting, but what you can copy is his approach to the game and his approach to life. And that's really the model that you want to build there, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I know that Chris has come across as one of the most laid-back character in the world, and like he doesn't care about anything in the world. But I can tell you for a fact, you know, I spent a couple of weeks with him in Australia, helping him with his fitness. He was injured, a few months ago, and helping him with his training session and nets and stuff like that. And the guy worked extremely hard. I mean, 8 hours a day, you know, between fitness and gym and that stuff. So he works very, very hard. And, you know, even though he come across sometimes as the most laid-back person, he's a very hard-working individual. And and that's one of the messages we're trying to said to the young people. Sometimes your image may portray to you as someone else. Are you just born naturally to do these things? But I can guarantee you that guy works as hard as anyone else in the world on his game. So, and you know, that's one of the messages he kind of reiterate to the youngsters most of the times as well. So just keep working hard. So yeah.
In terms of cricket advice, if there's someone listening to this and they're in a similar situation to the young players who come to your academy, they want to, and they've got ambitions to do well in cricket, as a lot of people who listen to this show do have ambitions to, you know, to make it as a cricketer, what kind of advice could you give them from your position?
I would say, you know, it's, and you know what I mean, if you fail at the first hurdle, you know, it's all of us dream to become an international or a first-class cricketer. It's not going to happen, because that's how the world works at the moment. You know, each counties or international teams only can accommodate certain players, and sometimes it's luck, sometimes it's brilliant, sometimes it's talent. But try and also look at other ways apart from cricket. Always have a backup plan, that if it doesn't work out, what else you could do. You can always stay in touch with the game. You can also become a coach, you can become a physio, you could become whatever you want through the same sports. But I wouldn't advise you, if you don't get across a hurdle, or if it doesn't happen when you want it to happen, don't give up. Just keep trying and stay involved with the game, because the game need people like you.
Now, Donovan, if people are listening to this either in Jamaica or in London and they want to know a little bit more about the academy, perhaps they want to find out how to join, how could they find out more about it?
Absolutely. Just go onto the website, www.cricketforchange. We have currently changed our name to the Change Foundation, but if you Google Cricket for Change, you'll get all the information, and my name will come up, or one of my colleagues, and you could contact any of us, and we're more than happy to help.
Donovan Miller, thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Not a problem. Anytime.
Now it's time for the mailbag. A couple of questions that get sent in to the show. And the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And if you want to send in your questions, you can do so by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. And we also have some phone numbers for you at the end of the show if you want to call in or tweet us or do any of those other ways of getting in touch. Okay, so let's have the first question. It's from Ryan. And Ryan says, I'm a young leg spin bowler and my run-up is not a smooth one. But when I play in my backyard, I have a different run-up and it's very smooth. Just because I don't have enough room for my normal run-up. I tried bowling with my backyard run-up at training and it seems I can bowl just as well or a bit better. My pivot and my back leg going up and over is better and easier with the backyard run-up compared to my normal run-up. I do a lot of training in my backyard, so should I use my backyard run-up or go back to using my normal run-up?
I think you've answered your own question there, Ryan. It sounds as if your backyard run-up is the most natural thing to you, and if it's most natural, it's probably most repeatable. And from your own feedback, it seems that you're getting some really good feelings out of it as well. It seems that you're bowling better with your backyard run-up, that your pivot is more substantial, your back leg is going up and over, which will mean that your right shoulder, if you're right arm leg spinner, which it sounds like you are, is going up and over as well, which is something that we're very, very keen to make sure happens, and then that will give you shape on the ball, which will make it go up and down, or that'll help to facilitate that as well. So, and it sounds like your normal run-up, as you call it, but I'll put some inverted commas around that. Is something that maybe you picked up through watching others or you've been coached at, and you don't get the same feelings. And to me, bowling is a very kinesthetic thing, particularly leg spin is a very kinesthetic thing. And I'd encourage you to stick with your backyard run up if, because it's giving you the best results and giving you the best sensations, and that's absolutely crucial. So it's a short answer from me this week, because I think you answered it yourself in your question, and I really welcome somebody who's A, practicing in their back garden or backyard, and we had a chat a minute ago about Glenn McGrath doing exactly the same thing, and most of the greats have done that and started off by doing that and then maintained what they've learned rather than being taught new things that go on top of it. So I'd encourage you very much down that route, and thanks for a wonderful question.
Yeah, it's interesting reading a little bit between the lines from that question. It sounds to me like he's completely convinced that the run-up that he uses in his backyard is the one that he much prefers, but there's something, some kind of blockage there which is preventing him from doing it. And hopefully, whatever that blockage is, whether if it's internal, that's a little bit easier perhaps. You know, you can sort of go with our blessing, if you like, and you can just do what you need to do. If there's a coach in there somewhere who's crossing his arms and tapping his foot, looking at you out the corner of his eye, then perhaps that might be a little bit more difficult to get past. But I think with a leg spinner, you've got even more flexibility than most, because, you know, leg spinners can do pretty much anything they like, and there's only about 2% of coaches who understand what you're doing anyway.
That's very true, and if that gives him confidence to just go and do what he wants, then that's fantastic. And if there is a coach, and we're speculating here,
yes,
but if there is a coach that is unsure about the backyard run-up over the normal and inverted commas run-up, then it might be worth Ryan just saying to him, well, how about if I just bowl with my backyard run-up for a couple of weeks, and let's see what the results are, and let's compare the results beforehand with what I put down in the next 2 weeks, and then let's have a discussion at the end, because then you can, you know, if you want to monitor your net sessions in front of that coach, or if you just want to use the gameplay time that you have, you've got some statistics there that will either support or challenge your view.
Okay, Ryan, let us know how that goes. We'd be definitely interested in some feedback there, both on whether you do it, what the reason was you couldn't do it previously, whether you do it and how it goes. So yeah, we would be really interested in hearing back from you again, Ryan. Next question is from Gennario. And Gennario says, hello, sir, I'm a cricket coach. I want to improve the fitness level of my team, who are in the age group 17 to 25. How should I conduct fitness testing in my club? Will the tests like yo-yo be a good option? Also, what are the fitness standards that I should set as a coach?
Well, we follow very much the ICC, International Cricket Council, and ECB fitness protocols.
which do include the yo-yo. They also include a 20 meter sprint, which is very functional, obviously, with the pitch length being around 20 meters, give or take 11 centimeters. We also do a 505, so that's 5 meters into a turn, then the turn itself, and then 5 meters out, which replicates a turn between the wickets. We do some medicine ball throwing to do some power work. We also do what are called CMJ, so counter movement jump, which monitors and measures lower body strength as well. And they're the main ones that we do. We don't go over the top really on all sorts of testing. We just keep it to the most functional ones that have the most impact on our sport. And they're very much in line with the ECB and the ICC protocols that many international teams are following. So very simple. And with a group of about 12 players, you can get through all of the protocols and give people enough recovery time in between each stance that you do within the space of an hour, which is, something that's really good to be able to do.
And you test those how often?
Well, obviously, we're not here all year round. We have quite significant holidays. So we aim to get in 4 over the course of a 12-month period. So given that most of our pupils are either here for 2 years, that would give us 8 tests, or 5 years, which would give us significantly more. So, occasionally we get an extra test in every now and again, but it isn't something that we slave over, because we're always monitoring people in their fitness sessions anyway. But to me, if you could get 3 in a year, 3 in a cricket season, so 1 at the beginning, identify maybe a break in the middle of the season where you might have less onerous fixture program, and then 1 at the end, and then repeat that year on year. It's very quick. You pick up a body of evidence which will tell you where you are as individuals, where you are as a squad, and what's going on around people's physical development.
Do you have benchmarks for standards on gym training, the amount of strength that you want to see at certain levels?
We do, but again, they can be very, very generic, and particularly, not so much a 17 to 25 age group, but I'm dealing here with 13 to 18, and obviously, peak height velocity can happen at any stage during that period, really, particularly between the ages of sort of 13 and 16. So it's really interesting information to pick up, but it's very difficult to get any trends or norms out of that data purely because we've got people that are growing at different rates. So I take the data down and I use it very much around the individuals rather than the group as a whole, because you can get quite disproportionate figures that come from that. And for example, we've got a 6'5", 15-year-old who serves a tennis ball at a sillier rate and bowls a cricket ball at a silly rate. And if you stuck him next to our smallest player and ask them to do various different tests together, then they're likely to come up with some very, very different results, which would sway any minimum benchmarks. So I think you have to take a bit of a tempered view on that one. Certainly when you get around the age of 21 to 25, then most people have finished their growing and their strength might develop a little bit, but you can get some norm data out of that. So to me, I give our guys here, particularly the sixth formers, the England data of what their minimum standards are, and their minimum standards rather than benchmarks. A number of our guys are aspiring to ensure that if they were good enough to play cricket for England, then fitness wouldn't be something that would stop them from being selected.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but the minimum standards for that are not particularly taxing. They're not looking to create elite level weightlifters or sprinters or anything like that. They're looking to create elite level cricketers, and fitness is one part of the mixture. So correct me if I'm wrong, but the standards aren't massively high compared to other, say, athletes who compete in athletics or weightlifting, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely not. And that it's the nature of a sport, really, that we want people to be able to hit, throw, catch, move, and all of those things. And this is one component that allows them to do that with more efficiency. We very much temper that. So an example, without breaking too many secrets, Is on the yo-yo. 2,000 meters is a minimum standard for international selection for a number of different international teams around the world, which is taxing enough. And the great thing about the yo-yo is that you are having to stop and start again, which is very functional within within cricket. It simulates a lot of the things that we have to do in cricket. So, I'd encourage yo-yo very much to be part of it, but I wouldn't become a slave to the results, particularly around the 17 to 20 age group, for your group, which is 17 to 25, 21 to 25. I think you can start building some norm data and some expectation stuff around that. But again, going back to our previous conversation, make sure that it's realistic and relevant to the group that you're working with, rather than people that are going to be playing for Australia or in England, because you want it to be motivational, not demotivational.
Yeah, absolutely. And the emphasis really is on becoming a well-rounded athletic performer, rather than getting really good at something which has a minimal crossover to the pitch. The classic is it happens more in more strength-based sport, for example, rugby, where there's a competition for who can squat the most or who can bench the most, and it becomes a pet project to have the highest bench press on the team, rather than thinking about how that can function when you're actually playing your sport. Not so much in cricket, I don't think, but you've got to be always thinking of what the end result is going to be and how much crossover you're going to get onto the pitch for many things. I've got a couple of strength standards here, which are not they're not research based at all. They're more collated by me from comparing the standards in different sports and things like that. So maybe if I can go over that list quickly, it's only a handful of things, and you can let me know if that is the kind of area that you're looking at as well for some of the older players. It's just these are adult standards.
Yeah.
Bench press, you should be able to bench your own body weight. You should be able to do a chin-up with half your body weight on a weight belt. And you should be able to do a front squat with about 1.25 times your body weight. All of those things are not massively high standards compared to, say, you know, somebody who's a competitive power lifter. But they're all deep. You're going to be strong if you can do all of those things.
Now it's time for David to clamber up on the soapbox and give us a minute of rant and rave.
This year I'm coaching a group of under 11 and under 12 players, and they're pretty new to the game, and so they're still learning, and one of their weaker areas is in their batting, and they're coming up against quite a lot of older players who are giving them a hard time and making it very difficult for them to compete in games, let alone win. So one of the targets that we've set this year is to say to ourselves, okay, we're a weaker side, but where can we make the biggest strides and improvements to try and compete in the more difficult games? And the way we've decided to do that is, one, through our fielding. And you can always improve on your fielding, and it's easy to do that as a team, and it bonds you together as a unit, so it's a great way if you're a weaker side. And the other thing is our strength, which is our bowling. And we're working on improving our bowling, so perhaps, just perhaps, we can bowl a side out for a low enough score where we might just be able to knock them off, even with our much weaker batting side. So that's my tip for this week. If you've got a weak side, work on your strength as much as you can to try and build it up, so much so that it makes up for your weakness. Okay, so that is the end of the show for this week. Don't rush off yet. We've got a couple of things we need to let you know about before you head off into the distance. And the first one of those is the winner of this week's competition, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. We had Ryan's question about run-ups and Gennario's questions about fitness. Which one did you prefer, Garrows?
I'm going to go with Ryan's this week. I thought it was a fantastic question, and followed on from one of our previous conversations around Glenn McGrath and backyard cricket. So well done, Ryan.
Yes, well done, Ryan. You can have a look at some of the courses there and decide which one is best for you. There's some leg spin options there. Now, Gareth, if somebody wanted to get in touch with the show and have their own question answered and have that chance of winning the prize, how could they get in touch with us?
Well, they could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. Our Twitter is @pitchvisionacad. Our Facebook, of course, is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. Lots going on there, lots of pictures being posted, lots of articles, old and new, going up, and lots of discussion happening. You can listen to this show every week as well if you subscribe, and that is done by going into iTunes, searching for Pitch Vision Academy and clicking on the subscribe button. And if you don't use iTunes, you want to use something else, then go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the details on how to subscribe in any other podcatcher. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Garers.
Cheers, fella.